Hello and welcome to a new series from D1Baseball.com. We are calling Fourth Coach Conversations. I am the host, Michael Patrick Rooney. I am an alum. I am a former fourth coach, or in, as college baseball, the volunteer coach. And this is our second of the series. Had a great conversation last Sunday. Five new guys in for tonight. Gentlemen, before we start, let me thank our sponsor. Special thank you to our presenting sponsor, Netting Professionals. Netting Professionals specialize in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for college baseball programs all around the country. The next time your field or facility needs something new, make sure to check out Netting Professionals. And again, Will Miner and the guys at Netting Pros are so awesome, just consistent sponsors of our sport, college baseball. So just want to encourage everyone. These guys are awesome. They love our sport. They do an incredible job. They've got a great product. So for sure, we want to reciprocate and support them. But so appreciative of Netting Pros putting this together for us and presenting this for us. So quick intro. So, you know, as you guys know, selfishly, the nature of this series, these conversations is, you know, I feel like you guys work in the shadows sometimes. You know, you don't get the hype or the pub that you deserve. We have this really weird thing in college baseball where the fourth coach on the staff is a volunteer. It means you can't go out and recruit off campus. You can't be paid by the university. You can't have benefits. So it's, you know, it's the entry level role in our sport. And it's not for the faint of heart, right? Like, you got to really want to coach college baseball. As my parents would say, you're going to go drive where and coach for what? Like, what are you doing? And so that's the nature of it. But ironically, you guys are the fourth coach on a Division I staff. It's a crazy thing. We hope it doesn't exist for very much longer. But this is a way, what I want to do in this series is I want to get to know you guys. I want to talk ball with you guys. I want to learn more about what you believe in coaching. And I want the same for the audience. So again, last week was super, super fun. And I'm excited. We're going to do this every Sunday night throughout the year. We'll probably have a couple that will spill over into January as well. So gentlemen, happy Sunday. Let's jump in here. So what I'd like to do, and Ben, I'm going to have you kick us off, is just as an intro, give us your name, where you currently are. And I want you to just take us through your resume, not details around the stops, but just where you've been. Start with your playing career and then your coaching career, how many years you've been at the current place. And make sure you please include your hometown, if you don't mind. So Ben, you kick us off, please.
My name is Ben Brazil. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, originally. Playing career, spent 4 years at Wake Forest University. I was drafted in the seventh round by the Orioles. Played professionally in their organization for 3 years. Last year was my first year of coaching. I was at Arkansas. And then this year, I'm at Baylor University as a volunteer assistant, obviously, with this talk. And I've been here now. We got here, me and the fiance got here in July. So it's been awesome so far. So yeah, that's my experience so far.
So Ben, you and I have something in common that I think is awesome, but it doesn't feel awesome at the time. If I'm not mistaken, you and I both share this. We have been one win from Omaha as both a player and a coach. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. That is accurate. Once in Gainesville in 2017, and then last year as a coach at Arkansas. So those are definitely moments that hurt a little bit, but good experiences that we made it that far.
Yeah, heck yeah, to be one win from Omaha. Are you kidding me? Yeah. And Ben, just so the audience knows, I think the highlight of my, you know, as a player, 1992, my Notre Dame team, ironically, Corey Mee, who's a name that will come up here probably on this call, Craig Council, we were one win in the old format. We had to beat Miami to go to Omaha. I think my contribution in that game was a hit by pitch. Ben, on the other hand, hit three bombs in the Gainesville Super Regional. So he was much more helpful to his team than I was to my team. So, but yes, awesome. Good to have you, Ben. Yeah, Eric, go ahead.
My name is Eric Hirschbein-Bodner. I'm a volunteer assistant at Bryant University. I've been here the last 3 years with Ryan Klosterman when he got the head job back in 2020. My career started at the University of Rhode Island. I actually started as a student manager under Jim Foster. And that staff was filled with Jim Foster, who's obviously the head coach at URI. Learned a lot from him. Raf Serrato is now the current coach at URI. And then Eric Cirella was the hitting coach. When Eric Cirella went to Salve Regina, I went with him to be on his staff, when part of his first staff at Salve Regina University in Newport. Did that for 4 years. Then I went to Felician University in New Jersey for a year. Then went to Becker College in Massachusetts for a year. And now I've been at Bryant for the last 3 years.
Love it. All right. So, Eric, I have a quick question before we go to Jake. So you may lead Division I baseball in syllables in your name. You got a heck of a name. So in baseball, we rarely go by full name. So I'm guessing that people are either calling you E or like H-Bod. So I'm curious, what is the go-to nickname?
No, it's Coach H-Bod or Coach H. Like, I think everyone in the nation kind of knows me as H-Bod. You know, I deal with probably 40 to 50 universities with recruiting for my NECBL team. Everyone just knows me as H-Bod. Coaches don't really know my first name in that. So I keep it like that. So,
yeah. And another unique bullet point on your resume, I apologize if you said it and I spaced it, but you don't just coach a summer team, you own the team. Is that correct?
Yeah, I own the Ocean State Waves and New England Collegiate Baseball League. So I'm invested in all year, 12 months out of the year. You know, our season ends and then I got another 60 game season to coach, you know, working with a lot of ins and outs of different players, developing them with their individual institutions and their coaches. They want their guys to work on pitch counts, on innings and at bats. So it's a lot of, I get involved with a lot of stuff. So I like that side of my job and seeing kids individually develop while keeping them in track with, I know what I expect as a coach at the Division I level. So when they go back to their programs, they're stronger, they're healthier, they're more mentally fit. So I do my job in the summer to make sure they're on their track so they can continue to progress year by year.
I just love that you own the club. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's awesome.
This is laying it down right there. It's killer. Yes, well done. So, Jake, go ahead.
I'm Jake Krupa. I'm a volunteer assistant for Butler University. I played 4 years at University of Toledo for Corey Mee. And then I got into coaching at Bolden Wallace University, which is Division III in Cleveland, Ohio. And then from there, went to another Division III in Ohio as a graduate assistant. Eventually got promoted to the recruiting coordinator called Muskingum University, really small town, about 5,000 people in the middle of nowhere in Ohio. And then from there, went to Wofford College this past spring, was a part of the team down there as the director of player development. And now I'm here at Butler. So
Jake, I love that you have a great Division III background. So you probably know this, but there may be more than one, but there is at least one very high profile Division I head coach who played Division III baseball in Ohio. Can you name that person?
That's Tim Corbin.
Correct. And he played at Denison or OWU, or where did he play?
Ohio Wesley.
Okay, cool. And then is there any others that I'm missing, or is Corbs the guy?
Corbs is the guy. There might be one or two more that we're missing, but off the top of my head, I can't think of any.
So, okay, perfect. Excellent. Yeah. Very good. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm Thomas Brittle. I'm currently at Charleston Southern. I'm originally from Monk's Corner, South Carolina. It's about 20 miles north of Charleston, pretty small town. Played at College Charleston for 2 years out of high school. Was there for 2009, 2010 season, and then transferred up to Clemson, played for Coach Leggett there, finished out my career there, and then was out of athletics for a couple years, doing a little bit of odds and ends, and went and took a athletic director job and head baseball coaching job at a small private school in my hometown, St. John's Christian Academy. Did that for a few years, every year trying to get kind of involved in the college realm. Found out I could get an opportunity to go be a grad manager at Clemson. So I did that for the past 2 years and just got hired back in July with Coach McMillan over here at Charleston Southern.
Love it. Thomas, say your hometown again. Say it slow, though, for us non-Southerners.
Monk's Corner.
Monks with the priest?
It's pronounced like that, but there's a C in between the N and the K.
Monk's Corner.
Yep.
Is Monk's like a person, like it was their corner, or what is the genesis of Monk's Corner?
That I could not tell you, to be honest. It's terrible that I don't know, probably, but I have no idea.
All right, there you go. That's homework. That's for homework.
Will do. I'll get back to you on that one.
Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Phil, you go next.
Yeah, I'm Phil Sebahar, hometown's Fayetteville, Arkansas. I played Division II baseball at Arkansas Fort Smith. From there, I spent a season with the Cleveland Indians down in the Dominican Republic in the Dominican Summer League. And then after that, I was at the University of Arkansas for 3 seasons. And now I'm here at Charlotte as my first year as the volunteer assistant.
So, Phil, do you speak Spanish? Are you fluent in Spanish?
Not as much as I should be for the time I spent down there, but I can speak a little bit.
So can you tell me about how did the Indians say, like, hey, we got an opening down in the Dominican? They say, do you speak Spanish? And you just say, see, like, you lie and say, yes, I do. or they didn't care that you were.
It kind of went like that. I said, yeah, I learned Spanish on the fly when I got down there. But no, it was a previous relationship with a coach who was the hitting coordinator at the time. And it was an awesome opportunity for me to kind of get my feet wet in coaching and professional baseball. And I kind of just took it and, you know, thought it'd be fun. Another country, yeah. Don't know the language. Let's go do it. Why not?
I think it's okay to kind of bend the truth a little bit when it comes to expanding your career. It's not good to bend the truth like with accomplishments, but I may or may not have been asked by ESPN at one time if I had ever done studio before. And I may or may not have said, sure. And
yeah,
I don't know that I had or hadn't. So that was
well, look at you now. You're doing all right. Record.
That's right. Yeah, just keep trying to trick them. So that's awesome. Very good. All right, boys, let's keep going around the horn. Ben, I'll come back to you. What I'm looking for now is areas of expertise. So, you know, hitting, catching, whatever it is, but areas, parts of the game that you feel comfortable teaching.
For me, that's hitting and catching. Obviously, I caught playing-wise in college and professionally. So I wasn't the best catcher, so I feel like I had to learn a lot, especially when I got into pro ball. So that has kind of helped me transition into coaching and kind of offering some stuff to help guys out with in that aspect. And I would really, going forward, like to get more involved with pitching stuff as well, because I think it complements what I do in teaching catchers significantly.
Love it. No, that's great. E, go ahead.
So I actually started my career as a working with the pitchers, and now I've transitioned to my fourth year at Salve. I was the infield coach, and now I transitioned to specifying catchers. So I developed catchers at Bryant. I work with the hitters all day with Coach Pelletier, who's one of the best young hitting coaches in the country. He's done a great job at Bryant developing hitters. He was at Marist before that. And then also, you know, part of my job with developing the catchers, I work with our pitching coach, Coach Herville, and during pens and stuff, getting to understand our pitchers and what in game. Me and him, you know, work together reviewing scouting reports and almost calling a game together, kind of based on swings that we read and stuff that we see throughout games. So I specialize in the catching side, but kind of like to dip in on both sides of the ball to see where that next opportunity is going to be and be well-rounded enough to be confident to take that next step in my career. But definitely from my personal standpoint, it's definitely dominating behind the plate. And I'm lucky enough to have six catchers that are really good and really work their butts off every day. And it's something that I love coming to work for.
That's awesome that you kind of do all those different specialties too. I love that. Love it. Love it. Love it. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah. So here at Butler, I coach the outfielders and I help our other assistant, Matt Kennedy, with the hitters. Matt's awesome. Does a great job. Lets me get pretty hands-on with it. So that's great. And then I run our base running system as well. So those are the three things.
Perfect. Love it. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, I also am the outfielder coach here at Charleston Southern. I also assist with the hitters and assist with the base running as well. So I would say those are the kind of three realms for me.
Love it. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm the hitting coach here, and I assist Coach Bignall with the infielders and outfielders and the base running install that we have here. So mainly hitting and then assisting with the defense and the defensive positioning and defensive work.
Phil, can you confirm that Coach Bicknell has a cot at the stadium? Like, that's the rumor going around that the guy actually lives at your stadium. Is that true?
I can actually look to my left and see it, like, right here. So it's it's empty right now, but it's usually filled. Coach Bicknell is usually sleeping up in here right now. So.
Oh, he's the best. Gotta love it. Yeah. Excellent. All right, guys, let's keep going around the horn. This will be a little tricky. So of your specialties, the areas that you feel most comfortable coaching, pick one. Could be hitting, base running, outfield play, catching, whatever it is. Pick one. And I want you to give me, you won't be to give me the whole deal, but try to give me as many of your core beliefs as you can in three sentences or less. So kind of a speed version of some of your core beliefs in one of your areas of expertise. So go ahead, Ben.
Okay, so I'll just pick hitting. So for hitting, I would go foundation first. Got to have a good base to energize the ground and create ground force. Path is second for me. Have to be able to match plane with the pitch that's coming in so we can have proper launch angle. And then lastly is a plan. So you can't get into the box without a plan. Got to execute, go up there, and sell out with something that you're thinking about based off a scouting report and execute.
Love it. Ben, were you a left-handed hitter or a right-handed hitter?
I was a left-handed hitter.
Left-handed hitter. Love it. Awesome. H-Bob, go ahead.
So I would say the defensive side of catching. The first one I'll use is feel. I always tell my guys, I could teach you, I could show you, but until you feel it, you'll never be able to make an adjustment. So everything we do are field drills with, you know, tennis balls, ping pong balls, really transitioning up to actually getting on the machine with the glove. So making sure that they can feel the adjustments they're making. Number two is understanding process, that we got to do A plus B to get to C. We can't jump a step in the process, and making sure we're cleaned up from the base up, you know, your footwork, your transfers, understanding, you know, the feel for the baseball, not rushing through steps, trying to be perfect. At the end of the day, we got to be athletic, but we got to make sure we're doing our process throughout our journey to get to our end goal. And the last one I could say is understanding that the art of catching is actually the art of deception. So when we're working on developing our catchers, we're actually trying to deceive the umpire, and understanding that in, you know, bullpens, we're actually taking cognitive recognition of balls out of hand on planes from our pitchers, and being able to actually beat the match plane and beat a ball to a spot and deceive an umpire is more important than actually how we stick the pitch. So understanding the difference between that, it really helps our guys, you know, take that next step.
Love that. Love it. Do you with the catchers, do you ever have catchers during bullpen stand behind the catcher, like play, like be the umpire? Yes. Is that a thing in catching? I've never worked with catchers.
I make my guys do that. Yeah.
I love that. I'm also passionate about base running, and I can't remember who I stole this from. I'm kind of bummed that I can't give that person recognition, but when you're trying to teach infielders how to hold runners at second base, and it's like really hard to get them to do it. Most guys are terrible at it, but one of the things that's really helpful is have your infielders rotate as the third base coach. Because really, that's who you're holding is the third base coach. It's really, that was a breakthrough. Anyway, love that stuff. Very good. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say for hitting, for me, I like to keep things simple. So for me, it's about timing. It's about teaching timing, different types of timing, pitch selection. And then we're always swinging at max intent, max bat speed, no matter the scenario. So the big thing with me is we want to give our guys a defined approach every single time they're up to the plate. Everybody's going to be a little different, but working within a team offense, we want our guys to understand situations. We want them to understand, like, guys are going to understand, okay, there's a guy on second with two outs. I know what I need to do. But it's all those situations that we harp on every single day. It's giving them the background and training in every single day, so they understand what they're supposed to do in every single situation. That's the biggest thing with me.
Love it. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, I'll go with hitting as well. I think the number one key is swing decisions. I think it's very hard. Doesn't matter how good your swing is. If you swing at bad pitches, it's hard to get good results. The second one is making sure that you're getting to a balance point and being on time. If those two things are not going, it makes it very difficult as well. And then the last one I think is also kind of helps with the on time point is bat path. Trying to get the barrel to stay in the zone as long as possible. So then obviously we know with hitting, you're not always necessarily on time because you don't know what pitch is coming every time, unfortunately, as a hitter. But just being able to keep your bat through the zone, help you be able to find the barrel and be able to hit the ball more consistently.
Outstanding. Good stuff. Go ahead, Phil.
I'll do hitting as well. I'll say get your best swing off on the right pitch.
Love that. Did you guys see the quote from Kike Hernandez today on Twitter? Just talking about exactly what you guys just said there. It's about not getting yourself emotional where you're just in swing mode, but actually making a quality swing decision. I love that. Did I cut you off, Phil, by the way, or that's
No, that was awesome. It. Simple. Yeah. One sentence.
And that is great. Like to be able to be that clean with what you believe. I love that. Good stuff. All right. So we're going to keep jumping around. We'll come back to some coaching stuff, but let's do this for number four. And Ben, I'll come back to you. So if you could, by the way, going back to that previous point, if you watched the Dodgers game last night, Mookie Betts, who's amazing and, you know, one of the best players in the world, but same thing, I forget who he's facing, but he takes 98 down the middle, right? Like, I don't know if he was guessing or just froze. And then just like, that was the pitch. The at bat kind of ended when he took that fastball. Then he's just got to deal with fastball up. It's just amazing. I love that. I totally am in sync with you guys there. All right. So Ben, coming back to you. So there's a lot of talk about what could we do to make the volunteer position better, but I want to give you guys are the ones living it, right? So if you could eliminate one of the limitations of the volunteer role, and I don't want to lead the witness, which would be the one that you would eliminate? So of all the restrictions that are on you guys, Ben, starting with you, what's the limitation that you wish you could eliminate?
I mean, I think it has to be recruiting and being mm-hmm. able to call guys and kind of dip your toe in that pond, if you will. I think especially kind of when you look forward into your career, you're going to need that experience recruiting wise. So kind of where it's at now is kind of handcuffing us, you know, not being able to actually recruit players. So I think if you're going to ask me, it would be recruiting.
So Ben, I'm going to peel your answer into two parts because it'll probably come up again. So you can't call the recruits, as I understand it, and you can't off campus evaluate them.
Correct.
So of those two parts of it, if you could eliminate one or the other, do you feel like the part where you're not getting to learn, have the experience of building relationships with the players, that's the part, or the off campus recruit part?
I'm a big believer in relationships. So I think, you know, that's much of what recruiting is. So I think the more people you have, you know, as a unit talking to a guy, like if I can get in there and call a kid and he hears the same message, I think it just helps your program. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah. Love it. H-Bob, go ahead.
I completely agree with Ben on that, especially when you're building relationships, especially since you never know like what point you're going to hit when you're talking to a recruit. If like you have something in your toolbox that you can bring out, that'll help, you know, seal that deal, whether it be a connection or something like that. That's a big limitation, especially for us. You know, if we're going for that next job, it's like, what's your experience recruiting? And for most of us, you know, at this level, we don't have any experience. This is our entry level into the job. So for us to be competing for that job market against another candidate and not having that under our tool belt is definitely something that's a limitation that we work just as hard as everyone else. And having that right will help us get to that next level in our careers and when we get there.
Yep. Love it. Jake?
I'm going to hop on the bandwagon recruiting and getting on the phone with kids. I mean, I was at the Division III level for 3.5 years, and being able to call kids and recruit was awesome. And I missed that. And these guys are exactly right. It's how you build relationships. It's how you get experience for yourself moving forward down the road. So that'd be my answer as well.
Cool. Thomas?
I mean, we might as well keep the train rolling.
yes.
I've been lucky enough that I've actually been able to get on the road a little bit. We got a waiver for me to be able to get on the road. And, but I agree, to be able to actually get in phone calls and be able to build that relationship, I think such a huge part, because I think that's the biggest part of recruiting is finding the right fit for guys. So the more people you can build the relationship with on the staff and kind of know more about what goes on with the culture and things like that only helps the program as a whole. So I would have to agree with the recruiting bit as well.
Yeah. Good stuff. Go ahead, Phil.
I mean, come on, you put me in a spot. I'm going to agree with all four of them. I mean, that's what it's about. So, you know, I'm going to echo whatever all four of them said. I mean, Ben started off great. I mean, it's about relationships and being able to get on the phone with guys, you know, and just start that process, have the same message and sell what your university is about, the values and beliefs that you guys have. And I think that's the part that I'd like to change the most.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad I'm asking this question. I think it's great that you guys are unanimous in this, but I think one of the perceptions is, hey, you guys are most upset about not being able to go off campus recruit. And of course, everyone wants to get on the road and go evaluate, but I didn't think about the relationship building part. Like that was not top of mind for me. So anyway, that's great. That's really good stuff. All right. So Ben, I'm going to come back to you. So here's the question. I'll give you an example of an answer. I want you to take an aspect of a program that's been an opponent of yours, whether it's when you played or coaching. So aspect of an opponent that has impressed you. I'll give you an example. When I was at Arizona State, we played Florida State quite often, and their offensive approach under Mike Martin Jr. always blew me away. Obviously, they have that prominent right field fence, and they had a ton of right-handed hitters that, as you know, Ben, from being in that league, you do too, Thomas, they would just wear balls out to right field. But I think it was more than that. What struck me about Florida State was they were hyper-aggressive first pitch, which you would never think of for a team that would lead the country in walks. So they were hyper-aggressive first pitch, which put pressure on your pitchers. And then with two strikes, they never chased. Just, it was this weird dichotomy where most programs, it's kind of one or the other. They're wild swingers from the first pitch on, or they're patient from the first pitch on. Florida State was both, and it was a real nightmare. So, Ben, aspect of a program that you've coached or played against that really impressed you?
And this is easy for me because this is one team that just always had our number every time. This is when I played at Wake. Duke's pitching staff and the way they game planned for our offense, it felt like year in and year out, it was we just couldn't get anything going against them for whatever reason. So just the way they kind of attacked our lineup. And I think their coaching staff did a great job with their scouting report and pitching our guys in ways that we couldn't hurt you. Obviously we played an offensive park. So they had to come in there and kind of with that in mind, and they did an excellent job of shutting us down those times we played.
Ben, more specific to that, did you guys feel like, hey, up and down your lineup, they had different plans for each guy? Or was it more like the whole weekend you felt like they're sequencing one or two pitches ahead of you guys?
I don't think they attacked us as a whole, just because we had so many different types of players that could hurt you in different ways. Obviously, the power threat was real with our lineup, but I think it's either the pitch calling or what they were echoing to them before the game was just, it seemed to click. We just couldn't get anything rolling.
How many big leaguers in your Wake Forest lineup? Is Fairchild and Sheets have both gotten up yet?
Yeah, Fairchild and Sheets so far. Yeah, those two guys so far. Craig got up in a little bit with the Pirates this past year.
He was on the 17 team too?
He was on the 16 team.
16 team, before, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, 16 team before that. So, and then we have plenty of guys still grinding out in the minor league. So definitely a special group we had there.
That's awesome. Very good. H-Bot, go ahead.
So actually, I'll actually choose our biggest rival, Central Connecticut, that beat us in the championship last year. You know, very, very tough team. You know, emotional team. You know, every single pitch had a lot of weight on it. You know, played good defense. You know, really, you know, pitched to their strengths, and they were very tough to beat at the end of the season. Every time we played them all year, it was a battle. Every pitch was had a lot of weight to it, and one pitch could change the ball game. You know, their coaching staff was great and, you know, good friends of ours, but you know, it's nice when you're competing against guys that, you know, want every single second of it. So that's always a battle and a test for us, but we circle that calendar date every year because we know we got to bring our best A game that weekend. And we know we're going to see them at the end of the year when everything is on the line. So it's really tough playing them every year.
That's awesome. Charlie Hickey is still the head coach there, right?
Correct.
Gosh, you're right. He does a fantastic job. Excellent. Jake, go ahead.
I would say the program that impressed me the most when I played was Wright State. Just relentless. Every single aspect of baseball, they were relentless. On the mound, they came at you. They did not care what the situation was. It didn't matter if it was 3-0 with the bases chucked, or if it was 0-2, that guy was going to throw a fastball with the same conviction. At the plate, those dudes were kind of like you described that Florida State team, ultra aggressive ahead in the count and then just did not strike out, figure a way to put the ball in play, get on base. And obviously, you know, with the way they steal bases, it was, you know, they just keep putting pressure on you in every aspect of the game. And then they just slam baseballs all around the field every time we played them. So it was always tough to get something going or to stop them.
God, it's amazing just the coaching lineage at Wright State too, you know, Rob Cooper, Greg Lovelady. I mean, just, yeah, remarkable. That is a really remarkable program. No question. Thomas, go ahead.
So I would probably have to go with University of Virginia, just playing against them and just the discipline and buy-in that they have year after year. I think that's one of the reasons that Coach O'Connor's been able to have the success that he's had over there. Every year, they buy into his system, and it seems like every year they have the exact same kind of players that come in and out of the program, and they're always competitive on the mound, and they don't give that bats away on the offensive side, and they just always keep grinding out. And I think that's why you see them have the postseason runs that they end up going. They seem to click at the right time, and I think that's why he's able to have the success he's had, as well as hold on to the staff that he took with him whenever he started. And I mean, other than I think Coach K's is the only one that's left since he's been there originally. So I think that's the one that stuck out the most to me.
Yeah, I love that. I think there are so many lessons from Virginia baseball, not the least of which is they were getting ready to go like Division III in baseball before they hired Brian O'Connor. Next thing you know, they're winning a national championship. I mean, it is that's, you know, for athletic directors out there, baseball is so unique in that way. You know, nobody that's considering going Division III in football is taking Alabama down anytime soon. But anyway, we digress. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, I think the trait that stood out to me the most over the last few years, the hitters at Mississippi State. I mean, they were just fearless, relentless, and they weren't afraid to die. You know, when you're not afraid to die, that's when you start living and you can have a lot of at bats. And they were just tough outs. They seemed to find a way to put the ball in play with two strikes, and they were just competitive at bats 1 through 9 through the whole game. And it was a trait that, you know, echoed from their coaching staff and their program that, you know, made a difference for them. And it's something that I've admired a lot.
Yeah, Coach Gotro. When you say not afraid to die, Phil, like I interpret that as like you can see it on their faces. They're not afraid. They're not afraid of results. They're not afraid to make. There's a freedom there. Is that kind of how you would describe it?
Yeah, they're just free. They're not afraid to, you know, get rung up with two strikes or swing through a nasty slider in the league. I mean, they're just up there. They know what they're doing. They're confident in themselves, and they're up there doing what they do. And it's a swagger and it's an edge that they got.
Yeah, man. And then when you have a leader like Tanner Allen, I mean, I just remember last year in the postseason, you know, if you were going to give Tanner Allen a chance to impact the game, that was not going to end well for you. Like that kid right. was going to, yeah, just incredible player.
Special. So, love special.
It. Yeah, that's it. Good word. All right. Coming back to you, Ben, give me the current recruiting area geography. So even though you guys don't get out on the road, you're from somewhere, you played somewhere, those types of things. So give me a recruiting area geographically that you feel that will always kind of be like a foundational area for you in your recruiting career.
I would have to say East Tennessee, just with, you know, the high school coaches that I played for, you know, in summer ball and just the guys that I know back there and obviously growing up. So kind of that East Tennessee, maybe reaching down to some parts of Atlanta mm-hmm. as well as kind of where I feel like I'll always kind of have some connections.
Love it. What was your travel ball team?
It's called the Knoxville Stars. And then I kind of jumped around a little bit with some different teams here and there. But that was kind of my main team that I played for in the summers.
Got it. Cool. HBOG, go ahead.
Definitely Rhode Island. I have a huge, you know, stamp here in Rhode Island for local youth baseball, especially running, you know, my summer ball organization and the amount of camps and clinics that we run for the youth. And, you know, just watching programs develop over the years and the connections I made with their coaching staffs through my coaching stops in Rhode Island. And then the Long Island, New Jersey area, because I'm originally from Long Beach, New York, and Long Island, and spent, you know, a year and a half in New Jersey. So I made a lot of connections there, bouncing around, working at facilities and all that. So that kind of metro area in Rhode Island are my strong points.
So, E, for your for the Waves, for your summer team, do you have like any honey holes that you for the players that you're recruiting and that you're recruiting and coaching in the summer, like Division 1, 2, 3 parts of the country, or it's all over?
Are you talking about for the summer?
For the Waves. Yes.
Yeah. So it's ironic. You know, we have, you know, a lot of universities that we've got guys for years, and a lot of those guys have gone on and gotten drafted. So schools like Kennesaw State, Southern Mississippi, Indiana, UConn, Rhode Island, like all those schools that we've had connection with over the last 8 seasons, like they always send us like their best guys. So we have that nice development structure where they know that they're going to send us their freshmen. We're going to, you know, do a good job with them and then progress that as they go on.
I love it. Excellent. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd say the Midwest. I mean, it's where I'm from. I'm from Ohio, from Canton, Ohio. So a lot of Ohio. I'm really comfortable with that. PA, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, kind of that Midwest area. I'm very comfortable with calling people up.
Love it. Excellent. Go ahead, Thomas.
The easy answer for me would be South Carolina. I've lived here my whole life. I've actually been kind of all across the state. I grew up for the first part of my life in the Midlands area around Columbia, and then moved down to the Low Country towards the Charleston area throughout high school when I've been down here. And then being able to go up and play in the upstate at Clemson, I've kind of been all the way around the state, had a lot of high school coaches throughout camps and just playing travel ball and things like that. So I would definitely say that South Carolina would probably be the honey hole for me, so to speak.
Thomas, I'm going to ask you a question that you may not be allowed to answer. So just say pass if I'm going to put you in a bad spot. Did you grow up a Clemson or South Carolina fan?
A Clemson fan.
Okay, gotcha. So yeah. So if was South Carolina even an option for you to play college baseball, or would you have been persona non grata in your family if you had done that?
No, absolutely. I mean, it was an option. Obviously, the South Carolina Clemson are the two big ones in the state. I went to South Carolina camps, talked to the coaches a little bit, okay. But I've got family members that went to South Carolina, so it wouldn't have been so much, but I think my grandfather might've disowned me if I'd have played at South Carolina, cause he's about as diehard of a Clemson fan. I was going to say the Ray Tanner South Carolina teams that I played against on the last question, but I didn't want to get kind of pushed to the side as a Clemson alum. Right. So I went with the UVA answer instead.
If your grandfather's watching, yeah, you got to be careful there. That's for closed door conversations. Those were fun teams, though. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, I'd probably say Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, playing Division II baseball, high school baseball, and junior college ball in this kind of area, the middle part of the country, that is, from Little Rock to Kansas City to Wichita to Oklahoma City, Tulsa. That's a pretty good base that I feel pretty comfortable with people that I know, close friends that are coaching at different colleges, high schools in that area.
Yeah, and those are areas that where the amateur baseball just keeps getting better and better. You know, Arkansas for sure because of how good the Hogs have been. Kansas City, it's amazing how many good players are coming out of Kansas City. My man Bob Moore, Exhibit A, right there. Christian Franklin, love it. Mm-hmm. All right, Ben, coming back at you. So we're going to do your core beliefs in recruiting, three sentences or less. So kind of boil down some of the things that are really important to you in recruiting as far as like what you're looking for in a player or how you go about it, wherever you want to go with this. But three sentences or less, some core beliefs in recruiting.
So I think obviously talent level is first. You got to have a good player that has skills and kind of a foundation to develop around. That's important. Character. And then kind of tying that into relationship building from my end, from recruiting, kind of what I spoke about before when you asked about the recruiting question. So kind of all those pieces coming together, can you have, you know, a talented player to build and develop in your program and get him drafted to where he wants to go? Guy has to be a high character guy, you know, team culture, that all plays into that. And then, like I said, relationship building, like we want to grow players to where you're 5 years, 10 years removed from the university. And hey, you come back with your kid or your wife and that's what matters. So those are kind of the three staples for me.
Love it. H-Bob, go ahead.
I would say number one with the talent side, but tools and athleticism, like being able to be multifaceted, play multi positions, you know, being able to, you know, bring something to the table to our club and our program, you know, that we're trying to fix and that we're losing that year, so to say. The second one, you know, going with the character, but, you know, work ethic, passion, coachability. I think that's a big thing, you know, guys, how long it takes them to adjust or how they understand their body and how they move. You know, being able to have that conversation and see guys working on adjustments and seeing guys that are open-minded to making adjustments wherever they come from. You know, when they come to our program, it's our beliefs, it's our, you know, model and seeing if they fit into that. And, you know, lastly, just like Ben said, you know, you want good character kids. You know, you want kids that are, you know, setting the tone, role models, guys that are bringing leadership that when the upperclassmen are on their way out, you know that you have a good core of young guys that could buy into the approach as an organization, buy into the program's beliefs. They're going to be able to take the reins and lead and be able to take the field with, you know, with that character and that drive and that work ethic that you don't have to worry about them. And you can just watch them go into the system and continue to develop. And if they do what they're supposed to do in the weight room, in the classroom, on the field, they're going to hear their name called in the draft. You know, it's going to take care of itself if they put the work in, as long as they, you know, bring that coachability standpoint to the field every day.
Love it. Jake?
Yeah. To echo the first point. Yeah, definitely tools/athleticism. You know, we're looking for that, you know, middle of the field type of guy, catchers, shortstop, center fielders. So that for sure, but obviously more important than that, looking for guys that are tough and that want to work, and that can take some hard coaching and can take me getting on them. Just, you know, I think at this level, especially you need kids that are tough. And I would just describe being tough as, you know, is having max conviction in what you do consistently. So not necessarily, you know, a bunch of crazy results, but just, I want the kid that, you know, if it's regardless if it's 0-2 or if it's 3-0 or 3-1 or whatever, they have the same conviction both times throwing that pitch to that batter. So that's kind of what we look for. Athleticism, being able to take coaching, that type of personality, and then tough kids.
Love it. Thomas.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with the recruiting kind of through the middle of the field, obviously catcher, shortstop, second baseman, center fielder, that ties in with the athleticism. Usually those are your better athletes, your more, your more versatile type players, can do kind of multiple things in the game, be able to change the game that way. Second one would kind of be a high energy guy. I think that's almost a dying breed these days, it seems, from the little bit that I've been out and be able to watch some kids play. Just guys that will go out there and just get after it, not hit the fly ball and expect it to be caught and just kind of run a six flat to first base because you think the outfielders are going to catch it because it's not what you, the results you wanted. And then the last one is just a fit, finding the right kids that fit your system and fit your beliefs. And I think it's important to be able to do the research on that, not only just the conversations you have with them on the phone, but when you actually are there watching and evaluating, see how they interact with their teammates, because kids are smart. They can give you all the right answers on the phone and be one way. And then they get with their teammates and it's not kind of the same process that they are with their teammates as they are with you.
Yeah. Love that. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah. The three G's: great student, great person, great player. That's it.
That's it. Oh, that's awesome. You know, it's funny when some of you guys were talking, especially Jake, when you were talking, I was thinking about myself as a golfer, which I don't play very much golf, but I'm the guy at the top of my backswing. The self-talk is like, oh gosh, this feels awful. That would not pass your tests at all.
I've been there.
It's so good. So no, those are good answers, boys. Well done. All right. So this will be fun. Kind of a quicker answer. So what I'm looking for is the best player you've either played with or coached. So worn the same uniform as you, best player you've played with or coached. And so think of it in these terms: you're running a club and you've got the first pick in the draft and you can only take one player. So I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but best player that you've, the guy you're taking 1-1 that you've worn the same uniform with at either as a coach or a player. Ben, you're going first.
I would have to say Dakota Hudson is probably up there for me. I played with him growing up, and just the natural movement on his ball. It's just, I haven't caught anything like it. Hadn't hit anything like it. So that's probably the guy I'm going to take.
Yeah. And it could be a pitcher. If I recall, like, didn't he have like a natural cut or like, it was like a power cutter slider or something like that?
I mean, his ball would move it just depended, and it would cut, it would two-seam, and it was just electric. So
that's awesome.
That's who I would take.
Great answer. Yeah, it could be a position player or a pitcher. Yeah. HBOD, same thing. Could be a player you coach. Could be a player you had on the waves. Whatever. Wide open here.
Well, I'll stay with a guy I had last year, Tyler Madison, fourth rounder with the Tigers last year, highest draft pick. I mean, you gave him the ball on Friday night, and he would just take it and, you know, go seven. You know, he was, you know, 93, 96, you know, touched a couple hundreds here and there, but just awesome human being, great work ethic, workhorse, you know, four pitch mix, just took the ball and like you could sit back and be in the driver's seat and call a great game and, you know, just had three plus pitches. And that's why he was a fourth rounder, but he was just an absolute workhorse, a leader on and off the field. We were really happy, you know, see him, you know, take that jump and make it to the next level and, you know, hear his name called last year.
Where was he from? Where was Tyler from?
Bryant.
No, I mean, Bryant, hometown.
He was from upstate New York.
Upstate New York. Okay, cool.
Yeah, the Utica area.
Dakota is, you're saying it's like a Knoxville kid, Ben.
Yeah,
right?
He's from right outside of Chattanooga.
Okay, yep. Gotcha. Yep. Cool. Jake, go ahead.
Best player I ever played with, well, I'll go with that, and it'll be Will Smith, who's with the Dodgers right now. So played with him in summer ball back in high school, and I'm pretty sure Will hit like a quiet 520 that summer. just the most down-to-earth, nicest dude you could ever imagine. You know, kept in touch a little bit with throughout college, but I would say, yeah, Will Smith, and it's probably not even close.
incredible athlete too. Like he could easily put him at shortstop. Yeah. It's just a freak show. Thomas, go ahead.
I'd probably have to go with Brad Miller. I played with him my first year at Clemson when I had a red shirt sitting out. I actually got to have my locker was right next to his. So I got to know him very quickly, being right next to him in the locker room, spent a lot of time in there, and he's just being able to learn from him, his work ethic, just kind of how he approached the game, and just a great player and just a great person as well. So I have to go with Brad Miller.
Where's Brad Miller from? Where's his hometown?
He's from Windermere, Florida.
Florida kid. Okay. Gotcha. Perfect. Phil, go ahead.
I didn't really coach him. I kind of just stood there and watched. But it was Heston Kerstead. I mean, the dude literally sees beach balls at the plate. I mean, that's just the most pure power hitter that I've ever seen, that I think's one of the best to come through the SEC in recent years. Just incredible. Incredible player, incredible person, and a difference maker everywhere that he steps.
So you mentioned his vision right there. That's something I loved, Heston. Like, what a great player. For him to come in to hit like he hit in the SEC as a true freshman is like unicorn type of area. So did you feel like vision was a big thing for him? Like, he saw the ball great?
Yeah, I mean, he could turn around and tell you exactly where that pitch was and, you know, Wow. Check it with TrackMan, whatever it was. I mean, he had a knack for it. Just God-given ability to know where the pitch was at and put the barrel on the ball. And he was by far the best hitter that I've been around.
That's awesome. Very good. All right, let's keep whipping around. Ben, so you're going for a job interview next summer. Give me your three references. So I'm the one that's looking to hire you. Give me your three references. Who are the people you want me to call?
So I would say Matt Hobbs. Obviously, mm-hmm. He coached me in college, and I was with him in Arkansas last year. It's a great guy. Has done a lot for me over the years. Next would be Steve Dunn, who's a guy that taught me hitting. Was basically my hitting coach growing up, former first rounder, played for the Reds. And then lastly, Coach Rodriguez, because, you know, he's letting me coach here, continue my career. And just the things that I've learned from him already has been awesome. So those three right there.
That's great. Go ahead, H-Bod.
I would say number one, obviously, Ryan Kloschman, my current mm-hmm. Head coach, one of the best guys in college baseball to work for. You know, learned a lot from him. You know, he's one of the best, you know, leaders, mentors, and just a really good guy for, you know, the players. He's my number one. My number two would be Chris Langan at Felicia University. He's won, you know, a lot of games there, 100 games there, 200 games there. I don't even know. He's been there forever. But he gave me my first chance above Division III to coach Division II. And then my original head coach and mentor, Jim Foster. You know, he taught me a lot at URI. Now he's a head coach of Army, very successful, and just one of the, you know, the smartest and brilliant baseball coaches in the game.
Coach Foster is hashtag sneaky awesome. I mean, he is so good. Very easy to forget that he's, if I'm not mistaken, he's the pitching coach at BC in 2016 when they play in game three of a super regional down in Miami. I'm pretty sure that was 2016. Yep. Yeah, he's so good. Yep. Coach
Foster.
One of those
brilliant guys that can call a game that you'll ever, you know, have the chance to work with.
Phenomenal. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, I have to say Corey Mee, my college head coach at Toledo. He's at Akron now. Just one of the, I mean, you know, Mike, he's one of the nicest human beings on this planet. He's probably the reason I'm coaching right now. So a lot of good talks with him about that, deciding what I wanted to do with my life back in college. So he's the main reason I'd say I'm coaching. So definitely Coach Mee. Number two, probably go with Coach Interdonato down at Wofford. Coach I is the absolute man. Gave me the opportunity to get my foot in the door at Division I baseball. Learned more than I think I've learned total in baseball in the short time I was at Wofford. So I got to go Coach I, number two. And then I'll go Brian Harrison for my third at Baldwin Wallace, head coach at Baldwin Wallace University, who gave me my start in coaching. If any of you guys ever have a chance to watch some hitting talks, go back and watch Coach Harrison's hitting talks. He's
so good,
man. And he's fun to hang out with too. I hope Harry's watching this right now.
He spoke at the convention a couple years ago, right? I think he was a main stage speaker at the ABCA recently.
I want to say 16. Was it 16?
Yeah, that sounds right. Got you right. He was a phenomenal speaker, phenomenal clinician.
Yeah, the man.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, the first one I'd probably say was be Jack Leggett. Playing for him, huge inspiration to me to want to get into coaching, just the impact he had on me as a player and kind of how he approached mentoring us, not only as players, but also as people, kind of getting to know you also as an off the field guy versus just what you could do for him on the field. Huge impact in my life. The next one would be Mark McMillan, the head coach here at Charleston Southern. Being able to give me my first job in the Division I realm, being able to learn from him and be able to learn his system and go through everything with him. And then the last one for me would be Monty Lee. I played for him for a couple of years at College of Charleston, And then was able to go work under him as a grad manager for the last 2 years and just learn a whole lot of baseball from him. I mean, that guy eats, sleeps, breathes everything baseball. So it was awesome to be able to work under him as well.
One of my favorite things about Monty is this man does not need a microphone, nor will he ever need a microphone. It's like, no. it's fifth gear. Like we're just laying it down.
Volume is always cranked up to 11 with Coach Lee. That's for sure.
Oh gosh. Yeah. It's like, he is great. I love hearing him talk baseball. Phil, go ahead.
First would be Coach Van Horn. I mean, his name speaks for itself. He's a living legend. Second would be Coach Nate Thompson at the University of Arkansas. The best hitting coach in college baseball, brought me up in the game and has really taught me a lot and pushed me through my career. And then third would be Coach Robert Woodard, my head coach here at Charlotte. One of the most forward-thinking, outside-the-box go-getters in the game. And he's, you know, he changes everything he touches and he puts his own stamp on it and makes it special. So I'd say those three guys.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, boy, Phil, you have been around some absolute rock stars. That's awesome. Yep. Good stuff. All right, boys, this may be the last question, but let's see where it takes us. So it's early in the fall, or it's midway through the fall for some of us. And so sometimes you're wrong, right? Sometimes you see a player in the fall and they kill it, and then they're not as good in the spring. But that's okay. I mean, that's part of player development. So what I want you to do, your current program, Ben, of course, we're starting with you again. Current program, give me one player we should look out for from Baylor for 2022, a player that's really jumped out at you this fall.
I would say Trey Richardson, second baseman, shortstop. I think what he's done this offseason in terms of changing his body from a strength perspective, the ball is jumping off of his bat. So I think he's due for a big year. Obviously, was a great player for us last year. But I think he's going to have a huge year. So Trey Richardson.
Gosh, that's great. Considering that McKenzie is going to be a first rounder.
Yeah.
Your shortstop, the Vegas kid, I can't think of his last name.
Jack Pineda.
Yeah. Pineda. Gosh, he's one of my favorite players. I love that dude. Gosh, dang it. You guys are going to be loaded up the middle. That's beautiful.
Strong up the middle. Yep.
Yeah, no question. H-Bot, go ahead.
I would say Johnny Tichillo, transfer at Stony Brook. He's doing his fifth year with us. You know, he's been awesome this fall. Plus defensive catcher, really doing a good job, you know, handling the pitching staff. You know, one of the best catch and throw guys I've ever had, I've ever coached, you know, consistent sub 1.9, you know, working his butt off, you know, that his offensive side of the game is coming around. He's an older guy, he's in the middle of our lineup, and he's just been, you know, on the barrel all day and really working hard on the defensive side. So that's a name that, you know, is going to turn some heads. You know, a lot of guys in the Northeast already know about him, but he's going to really put himself in a good spot to hopefully play at the next level.
Love it. H-Bot, did you say Johnny Agillo? Did I say that right?
Johnny Tichillo.
Tichillo. Okay. Gosh, you know what? Living in Arizona, I really miss the good Italian names like you guys have in the Northeast. I mean, come on. So good. Yeah. So great. Jake, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll go with Scott Jones. He's a LSU Unis transfer that we have in center field. Proven winner, man. I mean, you know, comes from a great program down there at Unis, and then just quiet kid, works really, really hard. Guys really respect him. It's by far and away our hardest worker. He's going to patrol center field for us, and I would imagine he'll hit somewhere at the top or in the middle of the lineup. Can run like crazy, can do some things, so we're excited about him.
You said Scott Jones, is that
Scott
right?
Scott Jones, yep. Hey,
have you guys ever had a Unis player before?
Not to my knowledge, no. Nope.
It's awesome. You're right, a killer program. I mean, arguably the best Division II JUCO program in the country. So
yeah, we got two of them. We got a lefty pitcher, and then we got Scott, so we're excited.
Awesome. Yeah. Thomas, go ahead.
I probably have to go with one of our outfielders, Connor Carter. He's a junior college transfer out of Mississippi. Just as a steady left-handed hitter, not an overly big guy, but he knows who he is and just finds barrels a lot consistently. And I think he's going to have a good year for us. Really good defender in the outfield and communicates and approaches the game the right way.
Connor Carter, you said?
Yes, sir.
And what JUCO is he from?
You
said one of the ones in Mississippi.
Hines. Yeah, I want to say Hines, but I don't know if that's right or not. We got a lot of.
Where's he going to play for you? Probably.
He'll probably play center field, center or left. I would say most likely. But we've got a handful of Mississippi JUCOs on our team, so they all kind of run together.
Coach Mack knows the peeps. He knows where the treasure's buried.
Him and Coach Izzo really got it going last year.
It's awesome. Phil, go ahead.
Jake Cunningham, local Charlotte kid, year two here at Charlotte, split some time in the outfield last year. He can do everything on the baseball field, and he's finding out who he is, and he's becoming who he's supposed to be.
Right-handed hitter.
Right-handed hitter. Yeah, he'll make 6'4", 215, 220.
Dang.
He'll be in center field for us this year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Well done. Gentlemen, that we've been going 54 minutes. It feels like we've been talking for 54 seconds. So this has been so incredible. So let's wrap with this. I'm going to give you guys some homework. And what I want you to do is let's put it on Twitter and make sure you tag me, tag the five of you too. Here's what I want you to do. Find a baseball person. Can't be me. Find a baseball person that all five of you have that person in your cell phones. So try to find a person that all five of you have in your cell phones. Now, if you can't have a person that's all five, this is like the Kevin Bacon of college baseball game. So if you can't find someone that's all five, like maybe it's four, maybe it's three. So that's what we're trying to do is find the five of yours, Kevin Bacon. And then I want you guys to put it on Twitter when you get the answer. Got it? So you'll just start a new thread without me.
Sounds like a plan.
So that'll be fun. Very good. Hey, fellas, really appreciate that. Your answers were great. This was super fun. Like I said, I know it's a great conversation when I feel like we started 10 seconds ago and we just ran out of time. Let me say thank you to our sponsor, Netting Professionals. Again, Will Miner and the guys, we are so appreciative of them taking care of us in the show. Presenting sponsor, Netting Professionals. Make sure whatever needs you have, you're going through those guys. Gentlemen, good luck this season. Thanks again. This was excellent. For everybody else, we will see you next Sunday, and we appreciate you joining us tonight. Have a good one, boys.
Thanks, Mike.
Likewise. Thanks, Coach.
See you, boys.